Welcome to Back to Business with Rob and Alan. I'm Rob Davidson, owner of Davidson Advertising. The sponsors of Back to Business are Tucson Window and Door, Al Coronado Plumbing, Steamy Concepts, WaterTech, Arizona Pest Control, and Alan Shoes. And the program is being paid for by Davidson Advertising and Alan Shoes. This is show number 45, and today is Saturday, March 13th, 2021.
And hello, my name's Alan McCloskey. My wife Annette and I own and operate Alan Shoes in Tucson. Rob, you know, we spoke about this just before the show, and I think we should let our listeners know, I won the lottery this week. I got myself a vaccine.
Really? Well, congratulations, Alan. I actually got my second shot yesterday, so we both won the lottery, I think, and it's a good thing.
I think so, too. And then I found this article after we spoke a few minutes ago. Rob, you might be interested in this one. There was a husband. He purchased a world map, and he gave his wife a dart and said, throw this. Wherever it lands, that's where I'm taking you when this pandemic ends. Turns out they're spending 2 weeks behind the fridge. Anyhow, Rob, we have a jam-packed show today with lots of articles throughout the sections. We decided not to have a guest this week, but we've got plenty of information. And then this morning, you sent me something about local bars and restaurants. Do you want to read that article?
Yeah, I do, Alan. You know, it's been this week, it's been about a year since the lockdown, if you remember, when we had closed everything down. Gosh, it just seems like what a whirlwind year it's been. And from the days when we closed down, we were afraid that, you know, the virus was chasing us down, until today and everything we've learned, it's been pretty interesting. But countywide curfews, months-long quarantines, and a general lack of consumer confidence have left independent restaurants hanging by a thread. But help is on the way. The House stimulus bill, which includes $29 billion in direct aid for struggling restaurants, is here. Other lights at the end of the tunnel, restaurant and other essential workers are eligible for vaccine shots in Pima County. And Governor Ducey lifted the restrictions on occupancy rates at restaurants, allowing for businesses to move back to pre-pandemic levels. Unfortunately, none of this makes up for the damage that has already been done. Today, we're going to talk about 25 local restaurants or bars that have permanently shut their doors due to the pandemic. You know, it's typical for companies to close every year, but not like this. Number one on the list is Rigo's on South 4th Avenue. After more than 20 years in South Tucson, the iconic Mexican restaurant was forced to shut its doors when owner Rigoberto Rigo Lopez was forced out by a private lender. Then we have Vina Vietnamese Street Food, known for its creative varieties of banh mi sandwiches. This Tucson Mall area restaurant started out as a food truck, and now it's gone. 7-ounce Korean Steakhouse at Speedway and Swan. This place was many, many restaurants before. In fact, Alan, when I was a kid, it was the first Bob's Big Boy in Tucson, you might remember, right there at the corner of Swan and Speedway, and it just closed recently. Geronimo's Revenge, this late-night food truck, gained a steady following on 4th Avenue. It's gone. La Fufi Cafe Milano on West Congress. This downtown Italian restaurant was a popular spot for dinner and a show at the nearby Fox. It's gone. The Beeline on 4th Avenue was an eclectic restaurant. Went there many times with a couple of my clients, and it's now not along anymore. Franimo's Greek Cafe, Alan. Been in Tucson for many years. In fact, my exchange club met at Franimo's in their little meeting room for at least 10 or 12 years, and they unfortunately had to close. Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails, they closed several months ago. This James Beard Award-winning restaurant is now not longer with us. Elvira's on Congress is gone. El Indio on South 6th Avenue is gone. The Independent Distillery on South Arizona Avenue, gone. Cody's Beef and Beans, longtime staple on Fort Lowell, a steakhouse and Western-type restaurant, no longer with us. Cafe Pocacosa, longtime Mexican restaurant, celebrated Mexican restaurant in Tucson, no longer with us. Greenfeet Brewing on East 44th Street, they're gone. The Meat Rack over on Drachman, you remember that, Alan?
Yeah, I sure do.
The owner, Jim Anderson, ran for mayor several times. Quite an interesting character, been in business for years and years, couldn't make it. Perfecto's Mexican Grill Express on East Irvington, gone. The Public Brew House, gone. Rincon Market, a long-time business in Tucson on 6th Street, long time, they're no longer with us. Alibaba Mediterranean on Speedway and Tucson Boulevard. Athens on 4th Avenue. Yankees in Marana, Chicago Bar, a longtime Tucson staple, gone. G's Garden on Alvin on Allen. I remember G's Garden when they first opened. They were the first, one of the first Asian buffets around. Place used to be packed, no longer around. Mestizo's on West St. Mary's Road is gone, and Rigo's on Oracle. And this doesn't include countless others that we don't even know about that have not survived so far. So our condolences to all these folks. This is a real tragedy for these owners of these businesses and the workers, and we really feel bad about it.
Well, the only way that I know to make up for it, and this is happening to a big degree in cities across the nation, Rob, is a shop local push, which it's already started many years ago, but now it's getting a lot of resurgence in a lot of cities, and some of my shoe retailer friends of mine have told me that it's been meaningful to their business when local, residents are trying to help the local retailers survive, and restaurants are no different. And, you know, that's mostly local business, but you have to consider that there are chain restaurants and there are locally owned ones, and who you help out might be important to you. So we want to make sure that, you know, as many businesses as possible can survive. And we know, though, that beyond the ones we've already heard about, there's going to be more, Rob, and, we're not really happy about that, but there was an article in CBS News that maybe you can pull up, which is talks about 9 million U.S. small businesses that fear that they won't survive. And do you have that, Rob?
I do, Alan. 3 out of 10 small businesses in the U.S. say they likely won't survive 2021. The outlook is even worse for minority-owned businesses. 8 in 10 said their company is in poor financial condition, according to a Fed survey. Sam Myers, operations manager for black-owned moving company Dillard Movers of St. Paul, Minnesota, described 2020 as a difficult year for the business and said that 2021 is shaping up to be the same. "We were at the brink of caving in and going out to find full-time jobs," Myers said, referring to herself and co-owner James Dillard. Myers said Dillard Movers' struggles began last March when the pandemic hit with a fury, just as the busy season for movers was slated to begin. Orders began to pick up again in June, she noted, but 3 months is a long time to go without income, and the bills kept coming in. Myers, who's 37, said the company managed to stay above water with loans from family members and the use of her personal credit cards. She said, "I even Instacarted for a little bit in case we needed extra money. As a small business, we didn't have a lot of cushion." Across all ethnic groups, small business owners like Myers spent most of 2020 taking extreme measures to keep their doors open. The Fed said in September and October of last year that they found that the percentage of small businesses with more than $100,000 in debt was 44% in 2020, up from 13% in 2019. The percentage did not include PPP loans, according to the Fed. The number of Americans who own small businesses fell 6% nationwide from October to December, according to economist Bob Fairley of the University of California at Santa Cruz. Ownership dropped 10% of minority-owned businesses, he said. Prior to the pandemic, business ownership and revenues were already low for both groups, he said. But perhaps more importantly, there's a huge wealth gap. Many minority business owners will simply not have the financial resources to weather prolonged closures. So a lot of people are on the ropes, Alan.
Here's an article about drive-thru ordering that surged during the pandemic. Drive-thru ordering surged over the last year as the coronavirus pandemic shuttered indoor dining and made consumers wary of entering restaurants. Industry experts, however, believe that drive-thru ordering will stay above pre-pandemic levels even after everyone is vaccinated. Fast food chains are ramping up investments to make their drive-thru lanes more efficient, while more fast casual restaurants are adding their first drive-thru lanes. Rob, do you have that article about the Phoenix restaurants?
I do, Alan. It's been nearly a year since the COVID-19 pandemic forced Arizona restaurants to suspend indoor dining as part of the state's efforts to slow the virus spread. In the months since, owners have navigated a string of recommendations and regulations, which have almost uniformly curtailed their ability to operate, but have helped preserve public health. On March 5th, the state appeared to take a step toward normalcy by lifting the 50% capacity limit on indoor dining, a move that's been criticized by politicians and health experts who worry a hasty return to business as usual could lead to another surge in cases. The new executive order leaves some state-mandated safety precautions in place, including social distancing guidelines, and it does not supersede local regulations, including the Maricopa County and Pima County mask mandates. But many Arizona restaurant owners agree lifting the capacity limit for indoor dining almost changes nothing for the struggling industry. Leah Huss, who co-owns Huss Brewing in the Phoenix area, which has two tap rooms, says her staff will continue to adhere to the same safety protocols they've been following so far, including requiring masks and social distancing. Lifting capacity limits has had no impact on us, she said. We see it as a positive step in the process of making progress against the virus, and will continue safe operations in our tap rooms and our patio extension as decreed by Governor Ducey. James Beard Award-winning chef Chris Bianco echoed that sentiment because his restaurants, which include Pizzeria Bianco and Trotto in the Phoenix area, will also maintain the recommended 6 feet between tables. The change to the indoor capacity limit will have little impact on the restaurant's ability to serve more customers, according to Bianco. He said, we might be able to add a couple more seats from what we have now, but right now we're at 6 feet, so it really doesn't affect us. So things are trying to open up a little bit, Alan, but people are being wary, as they should be. And I think the public will appreciate that at the end of the day.
Yes, I agree with you. And we hope and continue to wish that our restaurant owners can survive, as many as possible. You're listening to Back to Business with Robin Allen. It's on KVOI, 1030 AM, The Voice. If you want to sponsor our show, please call Rob at Davidson Advertising at 629-9555. If you know of a long-term Tucson business that should be highlighted on our show, please give Rob a call. And please come back after our commercial break.
Welcome back to Business with Rob and Alan. I'm Rob Davidson, owner of Davidson Advertising. The sponsors of Back to Business are Tucson Window and Door, Al Coronado Plumbing, Steamy Concepts, WaterTech, Arizona Pest Control, and Alan Shoes.
And I'm Alan McCloskey, owner and operator of Alan Shoes. You know, I'm remembering during this pandemic, Rob, how difficult it was to get toilet paper and paper towels in the beginning because people were hoarding it. And, you know, I came across an article during the break here about a husband and wife, and the husband said, we ran out of toilet paper and started using lettuce leaves. And there's a quote here from one of them that says, today was just the tip of the iceberg. Tomorrow remains to be seen.
You know, thinking back a year ago, Alan, when we'd go into the market and some people were wearing masks and some weren't, and they were saying masks don't help, and masks, nobody knew what was right or what was wrong. And avoiding people and the lines and the, you know, like the toilet paper rack just being totally gone. Now, you know, it's interesting when you go to the supermarket. Now there's still several areas in the markets that have not been filled that are still waiting to be filled. A lot of canned goods, a lot of things that people will never eat are sitting in their pantries right now. Beans and pork and beans and rice and all kinds of things that you would never buy. People were just hoarding everything they could get their hands on. It's kind of crazy how things transpired.
Yeah, I noticed that too. And you know, lately it hasn't been too bad. You know, in that toilet paper and paper towel rows of the grocery stores I visit. But, you know, we get another resurgence or whatever, you know, it could go back to that. And so you're always, you know, I don't know, it's going to live with me for a while about how much of a supply I have, because you never want to run out of that stuff. But, and it just bothers me that we were living like, you know, a third world country, so to speak. I mean, we'd always see these things happening in third world countries or in an area that had been hit by a big flood. You'd go in and the grocery stores were empty, and it just seemed to be so widespread. And, you know, they weren't completely empty here, but there were noticeable racks empty. And we were in a grocery store a couple of weeks ago where there were some missing shelves, you know, products on shelves, and they were just saying they had a transportation problem. And, you know, and part of it has to do with a freight problem, and we've discussed it on our show before about the ports. But let's give some good news here. You have an article you pulled up, Rob, on your desk here about President Biden and something he signed into law this week.
I do, Alan, but before we go into that story, we do have a caller on the line who has a comment for us. Charles, welcome to Back to Business. Good morning.
Hi, guys. This is interesting stuff. I'm wondering what preparations, and Alan just made reference to it about shelves being empty. I wonder how this has changed your business buying behavior in terms of slowly building up a stock, so that not if, but when some other event that has similar consequences comes along, we don't get caught short. So number one, how have you changed your buying habits that you have a reserve? And number two is, how would you recommend to other business owners that they develop a reserve, both fiscal reserves and also some things you can't build up stock on. I mean, shoes you might be able to, perishable goods you couldn't. But how are you encouraging businesses to build up a stock of things so that the next time some event like this happens, they don't get caught short? And I'll take my answer on the air. Thank you.
And I think I can answer that since I buy a lot of product for resale in our shoe stores. And so I think people should know first that some buying trends have changed in our shoe stores. And one aspect of it is that we're selling a higher percentage of athletic shoes and slippers than we sold in previous years. It's not outrageously different, but it's significant. And those same vendors are getting the same rush from all sorts of shoe stores, whether it's chain stores or sporting goods stores or running stores or comfort stores like mine are across the nation. And they've also been hit with a problem with manufacturing. So the supply is low and the demand is higher than normal, and you can't get normal fill-in merchandise from these vendors. And so in order to make the change work, you need to take money out of certain budgets and put it into other budgets so that you have what the customer wants when they come in as close as possible. So every business person, and the shoe business is no different, has to decide, what is really important to that customer, to the store. And we call it, will I miss a Saturday if I don't have this? So those are items that you may not buy as many of. And the ones that are important to your biggest day of the week are the ones you want to make sure you don't miss a sale on. So most of my friends and I have been buying more athletic shoes, and we've been working with vendors in order to support our inventory. So we order some of our merchandise far in advance. We call those future orders, and we buy them 6 to 8 months ahead of when we need them. Then we go back in very close to the season and we adjust those orders. And in the shoe business, some of our shoes come in 60, 70 different sizes with combinations per gender. So it's a lot of work to do this. So we've spent a lot of time doing that. And as a result, we've had to take that time out of other vendors that's not important to our business. So to make this all work, we have to get the support of our salespeople. And I think this applies not only to the shoe business, but to other businesses as well. What we need to do is we've got to make sure our staff understands what we're doing and that we discuss it so that they know when they're working with the customer what to lead them toward or how to answer questions if we don't have what they need. Does that, Charles, answer what you're looking for? I guess he did leave the air, but hopefully that's what he was headed toward, Rob.
Yeah, and another thing I think, Alan, that most business people need to really take into consideration, especially after this year, is you've got to really hoard cash, because cash is king right now, and without it, you're really in trouble, or access to it. And that's one of the things that this new stimulus plan has helped with, is giving some cash to some businesses that really need it and people that really need it. Don't you agree?
Well, I certainly do, but this goes beyond the pandemic. You always have to make sure you have enough capital around, and sometimes you have to work in advance and make sure that you have some open credit lines, and that's very difficult if you haven't done that, because during the pandemic, some of the bankers have reduced credit lines, so that's very tough right now, and I don't know of one business person that the stimulus money took care of 100% of the problem. It took care of a good part of the problem, and the rest was taken care of out of reserves that the business had or some personal money that they threw into the business. But let's look into what Biden is doing with the stimulus law, Rob.
Sure, Alan. On Thursday, President Joe Biden signed the $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief package into law at the White House, marking his first major legislative victory. After the signing, the White House said the direct payments to most Americans included in the bill will start arriving this weekend, so folks are going to start seeing these monies in their checking accounts. The historic legislation is about rebuilding the backbone of this country, he said, and giving people in this nation, working people, middle-class folks, the people who built this country, a fighting chance. The House approved the bill Wednesday by a vote of 220 to 211, with all but one Democrat, Maine's Jared Golden, supporting the bill, and all Republicans opposing it. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi called the bill's passage the most consequential legislation that many of us will ever be party to. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy from California criticized the bill, saying House Democrats have abandoned any pretense of unity. He noted that the $5.5 trillion in total COVID relief spending to date will cost taxpayers more than $5,000 each. The $1,400 stimulus checks will start arriving soon. The Biden administration is working on a plan to promote the stimulus bill to the public to avoid what they see as a colossal mistake by the Obama administration of playing down early successes like the 2009 stimulus. So the money's coming out, Alan. The businesses are going to be getting it. As I said earlier, $29 billion is going to be helping restaurants and bars. People are going to be getting their $1,400 each pretty soon, and for their kids. I think there's a $3,600 tax credit. So all this should help people, and hopefully they'll spend this money locally in local stores like yours and others and do what it's intended to do.
You know, we've got a couple of stretch goals in front of us. One is in making sure that by May 1, there's access to every adult having an ability to get in line and get a vaccine. And the other stretch goal is July 4th, when hopefully we can start meeting together as families in celebration of that holiday. And here's an article from Dr. Kavita Patel, who says that he predicts that July 4th will mark a turning point or inflection in the fight against COVID for the United States, going from a pandemic to where it's just a regular part of where of what we deal with is something that we can fully expect, the ex-Obama administration aide said. Patel said regular boosters or COVID vaccines will likely be necessary moving forward, especially as transmission variants spread. And, Rob, you have an article before we break. I don't know if we have time for
it. I think we're coming up on our break, Alan, so I think we'll have to postpone that article till after about when we're going to be able to gather. But why don't we get ready for the break?
Catch us on the internet at b2btucson.com. That's b2btucson.com. You're listening to Back to Business with Robin Allen. It's on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. We're going to be breaking for the news and some important messages, and we would like you to join us when we have some more of our show right after that. Please come back after our break.
Welcome back to Back to Business with Robin Allen. I'm Rob Davidson, owner of Davidson Advertising. The sponsors of Back to Business are Tucson Window and Door, Al Coronado Plumbing, Steamy Concepts, WaterTech, Arizona Pest Control, and Allen Shoes.
And I'm Alan McCloskey, my wife, Annette, and I own and operate Allen Shoes in Tucson. In this segment, we have some national or global news, and here I'm going to start with the first one. It's about the coronavirus, how the pandemic changed the world economy. Its spread has left national economies and businesses counting the cost as governments struggle with new lockdown measures to tackle the spread of the virus. Despite the development of new vaccines, many are still wondering what recovery would look like. Here's a selection of charts that they show, and I can't show you those on the radio, but they have charts and maps to help people understand the economic impact of the virus so far. Big shifts in stock markets, whose shares and companies are bought and sold, can affect the value of pensions and individual savings accounts. And some of my friends have seen that recently and remarked how they've seen some ups and downs going on. The Dow Jones Industrial Average and the Nikkei all saw huge falls as the number of COVID-19 cases grew in the first months of the crisis, and eventually those recovered, so they're very happy that they stayed in their stock. But it's also, the article goes on to talk about job seekers, and it was a difficult year for job seekers. Many people have lost their jobs or seen their incomes cut, and unemployment rates have increased across major economies. In the United States, the proportion of people out of work hit a yearly total of 8.9%, according to the International Monetary Fund, signaling an end of a decade of jobs expansions. Millions of workers have also been put on government-supported job retention schemes as part of the economy, such as tourism and hospitality, which have come to a near standstill. The number of new job opportunities is still very low in many countries, and job vacancies in Australia, for example, have returned to the same level of 2019, but they're lagging in France and Spain and the UK and several other countries. And most of the countries now are in recession. If the economy is growing, that generally means more wealth and more new jobs. It's measured by looking at the percentage of change in gross domestic product or the value of goods and services produced, typically over 3 months period or a year. And that's what that article says. Rob, but you have an article about some businesses that have thrived, which would help us see some light.
Well, Alan, you know, some of the big technology companies have done extremely well during the pandemic. After the stock market crashed back last March, they lost a lot of value, but most of them are way ahead of where they were. The success of Apple and other big technology companies and the struggles of the smallest of businesses is just one example of how the pandemic created winners and losers in the business world in 2020. Wall Street recovered after March. Main Street is still struggling. In 2020, it hasn't been uncommon to work remotely in sweatpants while meeting on video conferencing platforms like Zoom, hop onto an expensive high-tech exercise bike afterwards, and have your favorite restaurant dish delivered to your home by a driver trying to earn an extra buck or two. Of course, the flip side of that scenario has been deserted office buildings, empty restaurants, and sparsely populated gyms. And as few people traveled, the airline industry needed billions of dollars in aid from the government and is still threatening to lay off workers. What follows is a look at those businesses that benefited from the pandemic. Big tech was the big winner by far. Lockdown orders accelerated the big shift in life to online that had already been underway. With work and shop from home suddenly the norm, profits proved resilient for big tech, even as the pandemic crushed movie theaters, malls, and other industries. Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Facebook, and Google's parent company now account for roughly 22% of the S&P 500 by themselves. Never before have five companies been so dominant on Wall Street. At the start of the year, those five accounted for less than 17% of the index. As 2020 closed, though, pressure was still rising. Regulators across the country and world are putting big tech under scrutiny, so things may change for them. But, Alan, big tech has done very, very well, and a lot of people are looking at them very unfavorably right now because of the monopoly and all the kind of issues that go along with it.
You know, we all know some friends who have businesses that have done well during this pandemic, and because, you know, the economy shifted and people were spending more time at home, and they did a lot of home improvement. So it's not every business has been doing terrible, and we appreciate whatever help it's given our friends, because, you know, we're all in this together here.
Absolutely, you know, and it helps everyone, but you know, we need to really get back to these businesses that are struggling and make sure that we do everything we can to get them back on their feet.
I agree, and that's why we talked about shop locally. And here's our good news segment, which we're moving into this segment of our show, because we have plenty of stuff in segment four. But I found three quotes of the day yesterday on the Good News Network online, and it says, here's quote number one, the two most important days in your life are the day you are born and the day you find out why. Mark Twain wrote that one. And then here's quote number two. I am not a product of my circumstances. I am a product of my decisions. That's from Stephen Covey, and he's a famous writer and on various business topics. Quote number three. The most common way people give up their power is by thinking they don't have any. That's Alice Walker. That's very true. Here's an article from the Good News Network about a little girl growing up in Colombia, had a science career with NASA, and may have seemed unlikely that she would have that career as setting because she grew up in Colombia. These days, however, Diana Trujillo is an aerospace engineer. In fact, she leads a 45-person team at the NASA laboratory that's responsible for the robotic arm of the latest Mars rover. How did Diana go from simply dreaming about the cosmos to actually exploring it? That's a tale of perseverance that was perhaps written in the stars. She was born in 1983, and even as a young girl, Diana was certain of her passion for science, but she doubted how far she'd be able to rise in a male-dominated field. Fate stepped in when her dad, thinking having a second language might expand his daughter's horizons, offered to send her to live with an aunt in Miami, Florida. And with just $300 to her name at 17 years old, she took a series of housekeeping jobs to put herself through Miami-Dade College. In addition to earning English, she studied aerospace engineering, of all things. It wasn't easy, but sometimes she had to take six buses just to get to class, and other days she was cleaning bathrooms in a part-time job, help pay her way through her studies. She didn't complain, though. And she says, I saw everything coming out as my way, as an opportunity to come out of my situation. I can't believe I'm doing this job at night, she said, but I can't believe that I'm cleaning a bathroom right now, for example. But it was more like, I'm glad that I have a job and I can buy food and I have a house to sleep in. And that became the beginning of her story. And now she's leading this team at NASA, Rob.
Pretty amazing, Alan, you know, and pretty amazing what NASA just did the last couple of weeks, landing that module on Mars. And I mean, it's just incredible, the technology that our country has. And when you see things like this, you know we're going to end up winning this thing, and we're going to be back as strong and better than ever. The minds that are doing these things are just incredible. There's just so much good news out there. And here's an article that we found interesting. Sometimes when you meet someone for the first time, you feel an instant kinship. That was the case for two Connecticut co-workers who later learned their sisterhood wasn't just figurative, it was literal. Julia Tinetti and Cassandra Madison were both born in the Dominican Republic and later adopted. Each woman had a tattoo of that country's flag. The pair bonded over the coincidences while customers at the New Haven bar where they both worked teased them about looking and acting so much alike they might as well be sisters. With similar stories, Tinetti and Madison compared notes on their respective adoptions, but according to the paperwork, they weren't related. While the news was disappointing, it didn't impact the relationship. Even when Madison moved to Virginia Beach, the friends remained in close contact. After relocating south, Madison found herself hankering to find out about her origins. Tinetti, knowing not every story has a fairy tale ending, decided not to disturb the status quo. Finding my biological family just wasn't a thing for me, she said. I grew up with a great family, so I just kind of left it to what it was. In 2018, Madison's adoptive mom gifted her with a genetic testing kit for Christmas. From there, Madison was able to locate several distant family members, as well as a cousin back in Connecticut, who was able to hook her up with her birth family in the Dominican Republic. Sadly, her biological mom had passed away in 2015. Madison was thrilled to learn that her father and seven siblings were alive and well and eager to meet her. In 2019, Madison flew down for a reunion. We bonded immediately, she told the Washington Post. It was like I had known them my whole life. The next part of the story sounds like something taken directly from the script of a telenovela. In December of 2020, Tinetti's childhood friend Molly Sapadin, who is now a friend of Madison's as well, made a discovery. It seems Sapadin was also adopted from the Dominican Republic on the same day as Tinetti. When Sapadin saw the surname Collado on Madison's Facebook posts from the visit she'd made with her biological family, it rang a bell. Sapadin's adoption papers revealed that she and Madison shared the same birth mother, only they didn't. The adoption agency had, as subsequent DNA tests proved, accidentally switched Sapadin's birth record with Tinetti's. As it turned out, Tinetti was Madison's sister, and Sapadin was their cousin. DNA testing also revealed that Sapadin has a twin sibling she's yet to contact with. When Madison spoke with her biological father, Adriano Luna Collado, he confirmed a second daughter had been put up for adoption when the family was facing dire financial hardship due to illness. He told me, it was just a difficult time for your mom and I, so I don't like to talk about it. I don't like to think about it, she recounted with Good Morning America. Now both sisters are hoping for a reunion when COVID-19 travel restrictions are eased. Good story, Alan. Nice story.
It sure is, but we're going to have plenty more articles that we pulled up and things to share with you in segment four. Catch us on the internet at b2btucson.com. That's b2btucson.com. If you want to sponsor our show, please call Rob at Davidson Advertising at 629-9555. You're listening to Back to Business with Robin Allen. It's on KBOI, 1030 AM, The Voice. Please come back after our commercial break.
Welcome back to Back to Business with Rob and Alan. I'm Rob Davidson, owner of Davidson Advertising. The sponsors of Back to Business are Tucson Window and Door, Al Coronado Plumbing, Steamy Concepts, WaterTech, Arizona Pest Control, and Alan Shoes.
And I'm Alan McCloskey, owner-operator of Alan Shoes. This segment we call our Political Notebook, and we have a couple of articles, and normally we share anywhere from one to five stories on this. Today we have two stories. Rob, you have a story there about one of our favorite Georgia politicians.
Yes, Alan, GOP Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia was offered cookies and a geography lesson by leaders in Guam after she falsely suggested the U.S. territory is a foreign country that didn't deserve aid. In comments at the Conservative Political Action Conference in Florida late last month, she said, I'm a regular person, and I wanted to take my regular person, normal, everyday American values, which is, we love our country. We believe our hard-earned tax dollars should just go for America. Not for what? China, Russia, the Middle East, Guam, whatever, wherever? Michael San Nicolas, Guam's delegate in the House, told the Guam Daily Post, Congresswoman Green is a new member, and we will be paying a visit to her and delivering delicious chamorro chip cookies as part of our ongoing outreach to new members to introduce them to our wonderful island of Guam. The office of Guam's governor, Lourdes Aflaig, Leon Guerrero, offered educational resources as well. We would be more than happy to send Representative Green's office a copy of Destiny's Landfall, A History of Guam. Crystal Paco San Augustine, the director of communications for the governor, told the Post they were sending it out right away. Green's office did not immediately respond to insiders' request for comment. So she's got a little history lesson there. And, you know, Alan, so does our Senator Kyrsten Sinema. You know, she had quite a stir this week when she voted down the $15 minimum wage, and she had a cake and kind of emulated Marie Antoinette's let them eat cake mantra. It was not a good scene for our senator, and I think we have to call out both parties when they do things that are wrong, and I totally think that she was way off base.
Well, we have a story here about what is one of my favorite governors here, Governor Cuomo. He's defiant as wave of lawmakers call for him to resign. Now, we have to separate whether we like how he acted during the pandemic from how he may act during the, everyday life as a governor. And it's a little unsure to me, but I thought we have to report on his story. Facing unprecedented political isolation, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is insisting he won't step down amid allegations of sexual harassment. Now, this story every minute has an update, and I may have an old update here. But, you know, he's a third-term Democratic governor, and it seems like every day there's another person coming out over the last week saying that he acted inappropriately toward them. And he now has, I think, both senators from the state of New York. I think it's Chuck Schumer and is one of them, and he's obviously the majority leader of the Senate. And he's also not a supporter of him staying in office, saying he can't. He declined to comment Friday, but later on, you know, his actions, Majority Leader Chuck Schumer indicated that he's not supporting Andrew Cuomo staying in office. And have you heard any more recent stuff about that, Rob?
I haven't, Alan, and Andrew Cuomo is just being defiant and saying he's not going to do anything, and he's asking people to wait for the investigations to be over, so we'll see how it goes. He's certainly hunkering down and going to hold his ground as long as he can, and maybe the New York legislature will have to try impeachment against him. I don't know how their laws are. Arizona's laws are different as well, so we'll see how this plays out. But not a good look for Governor Cuomo, not a good look for politicians in general. So some people are a little touchy-feely. You got to be a little careful with that.
Yeah, you and I also have in segment four usually some unusual stories, and you have an unusual story that you pulled up about the U.S. Navy sailors.
Yeah, I do, Alan, and this is a good one for our friend Bruce Tenenbaum at Arizona Pest Control. One of the Navy's most powerful attack submarines has been battling a bedbug infestation. USS Connecticut sailors have been dealing with this since at least December. The Navy says it responded quickly and effectively, but some sailors have said help came too late. Sailors told Navy Times, which first reported the infestation, that the problem actually started last March while the submarine was participating in an Arctic training event. Family members of Connecticut sailors told the Kitsap Sun that the bedbug problem has been an issue for about a year. People were getting eaten alive in their racks, a petty officer assigned to the submarine told Navy Times. The sailor added that the situation got so bad, sailors were sleeping in chairs or on the floor in the mess. A sailor told Navy Times the outbreak negatively affected people's sleep, a problem for sailors with a stressful job. If someone's sleep-deprived because they're in the rack getting eaten alive by bedbugs, he could fall asleep at the controls and run us into an underwater mountain, said the sailor. When the submarine returned to port, some sailors took to sleeping in cars to avoid their racks, the Kitsap Sun sported. This was quite a story, Alan. How do you get bedbugs on a submarine, and how do you get them off of a submarine? That's going to be the interesting story.
Yes, that's part of our unusual segment. But then we've also been doing a segment that we call What Were They Thinking? And we have one just awful story about a pipe bomb that mutilated a man. A love triangle among live-action role players was allegedly the motive. sitting in his bedroom after a day at work, a resident of Manchester, Maryland, took a small white package wrapped in red ribbon out of a cardboard box that had been left on his porch that morning. As he opened the box last October, he noticed a nail sticking out and pulled it out. Moments later, he heard a hissing and whistling noise, followed by a boom. The box exploded and the shrapnel slammed into his body. For months, local, state, and federal enforcement worked to unravel who sent the bomb to the victim. The victim hasn't been publicly identified, but it left him seriously injured, the bombing. Now, prosecutors say the explosion was a violent end to a love triangle among a group of friends who strapped on fake medieval armor to stage battles with foam weapons, a hobby known as live-action role-play. People this week arrested Clayton Alexander McCoy, who's 30 years old, of Chesterland, Ohio, on charges that he built a pipe bomb and sent it to the victim. The defendant targeted this victim because of the victim's relationship with a woman for whom McCoy had feelings. The victim suffered serious injuries. We're all thankful he's alive and that he's improving. And that was a what-were-they-thinking moment, don't you think, Rob?
Yeah, Alan, you know, you can't make this stuff up. I think some people have just way too much time on their hands, don't they? I mean, who would even think of doing something like that? Unbelievable.
You know, every week we have endless stories, and we cut most of them, you know, that we find, because some of them are pretty gross and not pleasant to discuss, but... You know, but we have a lot of people that aren't using their time very well, and they maybe got too much time at home, Rob. You know, when you're at home, one of the things you do is you stress eat. And I personally feel if I keep stress eating at the level I've been eating, the buttons on my shirt will start socially distancing themselves from each other.
Well, and then that means you'll have to go out and spend money on new clothes, Alan, so it'll be good for somebody. You know, and I saw an interesting article. I just wanted to mention to you, I thought this was kind of funny, because Senator Bernie Sanders sent an offer to Jeff Bezos to attend a Senate hearing on income inequality. And unfortunately, Mr. Bezos declined the request to discuss issues around income inequality. Senator Sanders, a Vermont Independent and chairman of the Senate Budget Committee, said that Mr. Bezos is the poster child for income inequality, and it would have been nice for him to come on. So it's just an interesting, interesting thing. Alan, we're down to our last minute, so I think it's about time for us to sign off.
Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us, Rob and I, on our show. Catch us on the Internet at b2btucson.com. That's b-t-o-b-tucson.com. If you want to sponsor our show, please call Rob at Davidson Advertising at 629-9555. If you're a retailer, a restaurant owner, or any business that struggled through the last few months, or are simply someone just interested in business, we believe this is the show for you. We call it Back to Business with Robin Allen. It's on KVOI 10:30 a.m. The Voice every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. This has been Alan McCloskey.
And Rob Davidson. Have a great week, everyone. Stay well and take care of yourselves.